Hi, this is Rabbi Eric Levy. I'm pleased to bring to you the 9th and 10th Mishnah of the 4th chapter of Bava Metzia for OU's Shnayim Mishnah program. Mishnah 9 tells us, She'elu dvarim she'en lehem ona'ah. There are certain items, or certain types of transactions, that ona'ah simply does not apply. They are four. Ha'avadim, v'hashtarot, v'harkarkaot, v'hahekdeshot. So, buying and selling slaves, which is an issue I'm not going to touch on at all. Contracts, and what contracts essentially are like loan debt documents or other type of contracts and agreements, and one could buy and sell them on the secondary market. In fact, one could buy and sell a ketubah. If a woman has a document that says, if my husband dies or if my husband divorces me, I get a certain amount of money, and the woman wants cash right away, a woman can sell that, essentially a loan document or a debt contract, to a third party, or what's called a secondary market. Obviously, she's not going to get full value out of it, but if she needs cash quick, it's hers to trade with. So when it comes to trading shtarot, or selling, buying and selling shtarot on the secondary market, so there is no ona'ah. The price is whatever you happen to set the price at. In addition, karkaot, which means a real estate, or really land, probably be more appropriate than just saying real estate, because real estate just could be a house, and it's possible, I guess, to sell a house without the land under it, but this is really talking about the property itself. And finally, hekdeshot. And hekdeshot are if you designate, for instance, an animal or property or a land to be used in the Beit HaMikdash. It's usually an animal designated for future sacrifice. So if you want to sell that that item and somebody else and then take money for it instead, so there is no price that makes ona'ah. You could essentially declare whatever the buyer and seller agree on, that's what they agree on, and market price doesn't apply, and therefore ona'ah does not apply. Now, we could speculate on the reasons why these four things don't have ona'ah, and each one of these four might be different. The Gemara explains it based on analysis of the psukim in the Torah. For instance, when it comes to hekdesh, it says, you shall not do ona'ah against your friend. So therefore, since God is not a friend, so hekdesh, which really belongs to God in a sense, so the rule of ona'ah doesn't apply. That's a very technical reason why. And in all these cases, there are psukim, there are verses in the Torah which are understood by the rabbis technically to indicate that ona'ah does not apply to them. There's probably a deeper reason. We can analyze each one and try to figure out why market value would not apply. But for right now, we'll just stick with the technical reason that was provided by the Gemara. Now, regarding transactions of these four type of items, there are other laws that also do not apply besides ona'ah. Ein lahem lo tashlume kefel velo tashlume arba'ah v'chamisha. So you do not pay double, which is the standard payment for theft. So if you theft one of these items, if you steal one of these items, that would be in the middle of the night when nobody sees, and normally you would have to pay back double. You do not pay back double. If you stole somebody's ox or sheep and you slaughtered them or you sold them, normally you would pay four for the ox and five for the sheep, and that would not apply in these cases if that ox or sheep belonged to hekdesh. In addition, shomer chinam eino nishba v'nose sachar eino mishalem. So we mentioned back in the second chapter about shomer chinam and a shomer sachar, although here it's called a nose sachar. The first, the shomer chinam, is the one who watches items for no pay, and he is not responsible if the items are stolen. All he has to do is swear that he does not have the item with him anymore and that he did not misuse the item, causing it directly to disappear. A shomer sachar is a paid guardian. He is responsible. He or she is responsible for theft, but he or she is not responsible for accidents that might occur, lightning strikes and blows the thing up, so that's not your responsibility. Now, when it comes to these items, the land, the contracts, the slaves, and items that belong to God, essentially, the hekdesh, so first the shomer chinam doesn't even have to swear. That is, normally we'd have to swear that he didn't lose the item he didn't steal the item or lose it based on misuse. So he no longer has to take that swear in these cases. And the paid watchman is not responsible for theft or loss anymore. Now, according to some opinions, you're never responsible for these things. And other opinions say that you are responsible still, but only if you had witnesses. That is, you don't have to swear, but if the owner has witnesses that said, oh yeah, he was he gulped down that food that I left in his house to watch over. So if you're caught with your hands red, so to speak, then of course you'd be responsible for it. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Kodshim Shuchayav Ba'achariyutan, Yesh Lehem Ona'a. V'she'en Ochayav Ba'achariyutan, Ein Lehem Ona'a. So here Rabbi Shimon disagrees, a little bit of a disagreement, regarding animals that are made holy, that hekdesh animals. And there are two types of hekdesh animals. One where you're Chayav Ba'achariyut, which means if the animal dies, you have to make it up. And the other one where you don't. And here's the example. If a person says, I'm going to give a cow to sacrifice. And even though the person had Betsy the cow in mind, if Betsy the cow dies, that person is responsible to find another cow, because he didn't say, I'm going to give Betsy as a sacrifice. He just said, I'm going to give an animal as a sacrifice, and he thought it would be Betsy before Betsy died. And even if Betsy was his last cow, he's got to make sure that he can find a cow that he's got to sacrifice. That means that there's achrayut, or responsibility for this item, and therefore ona'a would apply, since even though it's hekdesh, you know, it's still a regular animal because it itself is an hekdesh, just the responsibility of what's going to happen to it is hekdesh. However, if the person actually said, hey, I'm giving Betsy the cow as a sacrifice, and Betsy, in the case where Betsy died, then the owner is completely off the hook. So if Betsy was alive still, and he said, oh, I want Betsy to be sacrificed, then if somebody wants to purchase Betsy and take responsibility for whatever it is, then there is no ona'ah, and the market is whatever the buyer and seller want to pay or purchase Betsy for, Betsy the cow for. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Afa Mocher, Sefer Torah, Behema, Umargalit, Ein Lehem Ona'ah. So Rabbi Yehuda says, listen, to the original list that we had of things that Ona'ah doesn't apply to, he's adding three things. A Sefer Torah, because the actual value can never be fixed. It's like that credit card commercial, priceless. In addition, when it comes to buying domesticated animals or pearls, sometimes people pay extra. They pay extra for an animal because if they have a pair of animals plowing a field, the animals have to be kind of exactly compatible. Otherwise, the field not only doesn't get plowed well, but they could do damage to the animal. So therefore, a person is very much willing to pay over the price for a good set to complete a good set. And a pearl, similarly, if you have a string of pearls and you want to add a new pearl to it, you may overpay on a certain pearl because you're trying to complete a set, even though in a normal market situation it wouldn't be that high. So therefore, since people tend to overpay, therefore ona'ah cannot apply. The Chacham, however, disagree with this, and Amru Lo, they say to him, Lo Amru Ella et Elu. They only said those four items, and therefore we're going to stick with those four items, which are contracts, property, slaves, and things that are made hekdesh, things that are dedicated to God. Now, in Mishnah Yud, we should probably define what the word ona'ah means. And we've kind of been up to this point, really, the entire parak, just using the word ona'ah sort of in abstract sense to mean when you overpay or get underpaid for an item. The word ona'ah really means to cause sorrow, to cause weariness, I guess to cause pain in some way, although usually it's an emotional stress. And just as one can do that by being financially, you wouldn't want to say dishonest, because ona'ah is not exactly dishonest. Ona'ah is just where, you know, a guy who's really good at bartering and making money, leverages his expertise against somebody else and really takes the other person for a ride. And the other person kind of knows that he's being taken for a ride, but what is he going to do? He's not that good at bargaining. You know, they say that when you go into a shuk in Israel, you should automatically assume you get 10% off. But I'm sure there are plenty of people that are willing to pay 20% higher, just not have to go through the pain of having to haggle and barter, and these people should not be taken advantage of. So, kishem shona b'mekach u'memkar. Now the Mishnah says, just like you can do this oppression, this causing of sorrow or weariness in mekach u'memkar, in financial transactions, kach ona'a b'dvarim, you could do it with words as well. Now, how does one do it with words? In the first case, it's still a financial issue, which is, don't ask, lo yomar lo b'kama chafetz zeh. Don't ask a person in a shop owner how much a certain good costs. And he has no intention to purchase the item whatsoever, which means don't go in the store and say, hey, how much is this computer, and then walk out of the store, and all you want to know is the price. You had no intention to purchase it whatsoever. Now, on these issues, it is unwise to paskin, to decide what halacha is from a Mishnah. That's what Gemara is for, and then the Shulchan Aruch. Nonetheless, so you know, people could really bounce off of this idea that you can't walk into a store and ask somebody what the price of things are for, because you don't want to cause them pain or get their hopes up that they're actually make a sale, and all of a sudden you walk out of the store and and really you had no intention of doing anything but walking out of the store. Now, there are all kinds of matters that get involved in this. You know, what if it's like a guitar store? So it happens to be that music stores, they like people to come in and play because it creates an atmosphere that causes maybe other people to buy. You could argue that if you walk into a Best Buy and ask a salesperson the price, if the salesperson is not making a commission, then what do they care whether you buy or not because they're not the owner of the store? So I would say really you have to ask your personal rabbi or study the issue and see how far this matter goes, because I think in modern shopping and modern markets, things are a little bit different than they were in ancient times, where essentially each store owner was pretty much run by the store owner, and therefore had an absolute vested interest. But again, for halakhic purposes, you should ask your own rabbi. Im haya baal tshuva lo yomar lo zechor ma'aseich harishonim. And now we get into onan that has nothing to do with financial issues. If someone came back to the religion from an irreligious status or even from an immoral lifestyle, don't say, oh, I remember what you used to do. That is, you can't make somebody feel like that. And v'imhu ben gerim, and if he is the son of converts, lo yomar lo, so you don't say to him, zechor ma'aseich avotecha, remember what your parents used to do. Shneamar, because it says in the pasuk, v'ger lo toneh, v'lo tilchatzenu, don't oppress a convert, don't make him feel sorrow. This sort of gives a whole new slant to the idea of ona'ah, because up to this point it seemed to be more or less like a technical, almost a capitalist idea. That is, in order to make sure capitalism doesn't go wild, we're not going to allow people to price gouge so that, let's say there's a run on gas, we're not going to be able to charge $10 a gallon for gas, or $6 at a baseball game for water, for a bottle of water, just because you can. So it looked at first, if not exactly like socialism, like a desire to limit some of the dangers in capitalism. But here, the sense really is a little different. The sense seems to be like a personal basis. It's not so much that we're trying to protect capitalism, but when a person gets reamed a little bit when it comes to financial, a person sort of knows that they are getting that they're really kind of getting, again, not cheated exactly, but manhandled, misused. So that creates sorrow and oppression, and that's why ona'ah is the problem that it is. I don't know if that's true, but based on these final cases of ona'ah, which have nothing to do with financial transactions and everything to do with not making a person feel bad, so it could be that the entire spectrum of ona'ah falls under that category or is driven by that overarching ethical desire by God.